Greetings out there to everybody at TFMR and to the worldwide listening public. Hey, it's Thursday, and instead of our regular webinar, I thought we'd focus on a specific topic today, and that being what appears to finally be the rollout of this yuan-denominated crude oil contract in Shanghai. I'm sure to folks sounds, you know, like a foreign language, you know, when we talk about the specifics of it and how it works and why it's going to be important. And so I thought to kind of cipher through that and maybe put it in English, I'd bring in one of my favorite Englishmen, Alistair MacLeod, who is the head of research at Gold Money. And he is someone who has been following this closely for really years. And I thought if anybody, like I said, could explain the potential significance of all of this, it'd be Alistair. So Alistair, thank you so much for taking some time.
Thank you very much indeed, Craig.
All right. So let's put it into English. We have been following these developments. I mean, it has been what they've maybe done five test runs. Maybe in the West, we call it a beta test of the platform. And so much of this foundation that the Chinese have built over the last 10 years has come in steps, you know, kind of one brick at a time. All of these beta tests are now done. The date that we have in mind, it looks like, is March 26th, which is a week from Monday. In your own words, my friend, can you begin to lay out for people the significance of what this represents?
Yes, of course. It represents the first major threat, credible threat, to the status of the petrodollar. That is why it is so important. And that is why this was first mooted, I think, back in 2012, but has been delayed and delayed and delayed. And I think it was last August, I was contacted by a journalist writing an article for the Nikkei Asia Review. And he said that he had information that the training was now being completed and all the rest of it. This was back in August. Mm-hmm. So we expected that this contract would be introduced by the year end. It wasn't. It slipped. Now, I think if you appreciate that it threatens the status of the petrodollar, you can see how important the introduction of this contract is in geopolitical terms. And I think you can also see why it is. The timing of it has been very much set by negotiations, if you like, at the highest level between Beijing and Washington. So this is a very, very big deal. Bear in mind that in the past, people who have had the temerity to challenge the petrodollar's status have ended up dead. Like Saddam Hussein.
Yes.
Before the last invasion of Iraq, Saddam Hussein announced that he intended to accept payment for oil in Europe. Gaddafi said that he intended to set up a gold-backed pan-African new currency. And look what happened to him. So this is something which, we don't actually have direct evidence that this is the case, but there is the circumstantial evidence, and there are other examples of this as well, but there is the circumstantial evidence that the Americans place a very, very high premium on having the petrodollar as the only currency for which energy is bought and sold across borders around the world. Now, obviously, they can't go and invade China in the way in which they invaded Iraq. They can't sort of put in Navy SEALs into Beijing in the way in which the special forces destabilized Libya. So this is actually a very big deal. Now, if you understand that, you begin to understand some of the events that have now taken place from there. The first point to make is that shortly after the date of this was announced, the US came out and said that it was going to impose tariffs on steel and aluminium.
Right.
Now, this was very definitely focused at China. In other words, it was a response to what was happening on this yuan contract. And since then, it seems that all restraint between Russia and China on the one side and the US on the other in this geopolitical game seem to have been gone. We've yet to have a reaction from China beyond a statement that it will increase military spending. But Russia, on the other hand, announced a raft of new weapons, including a missile that travels apparently at Mach 20.
Yeah.
Nothing can shoot this down. And this was quite clearly angled at making sure that the Americans are fully aware that you don't escalate a Cold War into something worse with Russia. So there is that. In the middle of this, of course, we also had North Korea. And
right.
I think the way I would look at North Korea is that from China's point of view, they needed to tidy that one up. Remember that the northern boundary of North Korea faces onto the Chinese border and also, in a very small way, the Russian border.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way those two superpowers want to see American troops on the other side of that border. So I think the obvious solution for this, and this is why I would regard it as a tidying up operation, is that effectively North Korea, after a bit of negotiation, I'm sure they will give up their nuclear programs and all the rest of it. They will effectively come underneath the Chinese aegis, under Chinese protection. And the threat, if you like, the nuclear threat, I think, will be neutralized that way. So you can see that there are big things happening on the geopolitical scene. Now, if I can return to this oil contract, which, as I say, is so important because it threatens the status of the petrodollar, the timing of this, I think, to some extent, has been driven by China's oil suppliers. She imports roughly 8.5 million barrels of oil a day, and her main suppliers are countries like Russia, obviously. They already accept yuan. They're happy to do so. You've got Saudi Arabia, who are now happy to accept yuan. That agreement is in place. You've also got Iran, who don't want to take Satan's currency at all.
Right.
And anyway, Satan won't let Iran have her currency. So you can see that if there is a meeting of minds on that point, if nowhere else. Also, Namibia is one of China's largest suppliers, and she's already been accepting yuan for some time. So the point now is that with China's oil suppliers in the main accepting yuan, and anyone who wants to supply oil to China not accepting yuan will find they're at a disadvantage, China now does have to introduce the financial instruments to make those trade settlements possible and sensible. And that is why this yuan contract has now come in. What it does is it allows an oil supplier to, let's say, agree to deliver X million barrels on a certain date, and they can then sell the yuan in the futures market so they can protect the currency risk. So they can cover it, but you have to cover it from yuan into something else.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's something else on the margin, and I think it's only on the margin at this stage, could well be gold. There are matching contracts in Hong Kong and also, believe it or not, Dubai. Now, there was, shortly after the announcement of the introduction of the oil yuan futures on the 26th of March, an announcement that there were talks advanced on a gold corridor in Asia. And this involves the Hong Kong Gold Exchange. It also involves the Chinese Gold and Silver Exchange Society. It involves Singapore. It involves Dubai. And there are various other countries likely to come in. The newly emerging Myanmar, for example, is one which is mentioned. And Cambodia also look likely to join in. They're also building a 1,500-ton vault, or at least they will, whether they actually have to build it from scratch or whether they're just adapting an existing building, it doesn't really matter. But this 1,500-ton vault will be ready in about 2 or 3 months. It's based in the Qianhai Free Trade Zone near Shenzhen. So you can see that for whatever reason, and they're saying this is in connection with the Belt and Road project. I think that's a smokescreen. What they're doing, I think, is they are making sure that there is the facility, if you like, for anyone buying futures and exercising them in the form of delivery, that there is a vault there which can store that gold until such time as it is taken away to another center. And that is what that is about. So the suspicions which I've been voicing for some time that some of this oil trade could hedge itself into gold looks like coming about. Now, when it comes to the yuan itself, you may have noticed that the yuan has been relatively strong against the dollar since really January last year, January 2017. This, if you like, in a sense, could be regarded as a reflection of a weakening dollar. But I think this is important because bear in mind that the Chinese do have significant infrastructure plans, not only within China itself, but throughout Asia. Mm-hmm. So over the next 5 to 10 years, they are going to be probably the world's most significant buyers of industrial and raw materials, as well as energy. And therefore, they will be setting the prices. This will mean that there will be inflation pressures right from the start as these commodity prices tend to rise at this stage of this demand cycle. But they will be rising in dollar price, you know, it measured in dollars. I think what China wants to do is to let the yuan rise gently to take some of the price steam, if you like, out of these imported commodities so that the effect on domestic inflation is not that great. Now, if you come back to looking at it from the point of view of an oil supplier to China, accepting yuan rather than dollars actually begins to look like a better deal than taking those dollars. So all in all, there are sort of huge shifts in the way everything is working in Asia, and they are actually moving away quite substantially from America.
And I guess as you describe it, it really is just kind of a foundational piece of what they're building. I guess that's kind of where I wanted to go here too, was so that people who have been, you know, so many folks pin their hopes on some certain event, you know, or something's going to happen that's going to break the banks and all this kind of stuff. And so much talk has been made about this contract that I think there are people out there that think that on March the 26th, you know, lightning's going to strike and all of a sudden gold's going to be $5,000 an ounce. Yeah. And when that doesn't happen, it's just going to be more people throwing their hands in the air and saying, see, again, this is no big deal. But that's not what the case is. This is a big deal, correct?
Yes, it is a very, very big deal. But before then, you were making the point that it would be, I don't think, very clever to expect on March the 27th to see, you know, to think gold is suddenly going to jump up. That's not the way things work. It is possible that gold will firm up ahead of that date, but I wouldn't bet the ranch on it. I mean, this has got to be a developing story.
Yeah.
And remember also that it's not beyond the wit of the American US Treasury to try and put a lid on the price of gold as this begins to trade. It's probably not beyond the wit of the Chinese to do that as well, simply because they may not, I mean, unless the geopolitical situation escalates very rapidly, they may not wish to see the gold price rise sharply and have the introduction of the yuan contract definitely tied into it, because that then becomes an extra bone of contention in its relationship with Washington.
Right.
So there are quite a number of factors that would suggest that, you know, this is going to be an evolving story. It's not going to be something that's just going to sort of suddenly hit the ground running later on this month.
Yeah. And I want to run three other things past you that are seemingly related. And I just want to ask you then how much you think they are related. One, you've got this sudden export of gold from China, which is we've never seen before. China didn't even allow the export of gold. But yet, like about 5 metric tons suddenly was shown on the international trade tables to go from China to London. I should also tag at about the same time, Hungary wanted back their whopping 3 metric tons All of a sudden, China ships some in. There's that. Then there's this thing that came out from the LBMA about a week or two ago that said they are no longer going to post within 15 minutes the daily fixes. The twice daily gold fixes and the daily silver fix, those prices won't be even be revealed until midnight the following night. It's like a 14-hour change. Mm. And then the other piece that I find interesting is this IPO of Saudi Aramco, which has been discussed now for almost 2 years. And all of a sudden, it's been put off till next year. To what extent do you think those three things have any relation at all, perhaps, to what we've been discussing?
Well, okay. First of all, we don't know why there was an export of gold from China back into London of about 5 tons. I think there are possibly two explanations. One is that someone made some sort of accounting error. I would discount that because 5 tons recognizes it's quite a large error.
Yeah.
But I think more likely, bear in mind that the new LME contract the gold and silver contract and all the rest of it, but interestingly, the gold contract has been very successful. But given that this new LME contract has been supported quite strongly by the major Chinese state banks, remember that this is owned by the Hong Kong Exchange. The LME, they took it out. So it's effectively may not be Chinese controlled in a sense, but certainly they very much had the blessing of the Chinese authorities. Now, I think what they may well be doing is I think they may be just making sure that they've got some liquidity in the market in London. And I think I don't know, but I would suspect that that is what that 5 tons is all about.
Okay.
So I think that's the first one. The second point you were asking about is the LBMA postponing fixes. I honestly don't know why that is. It sounds to me to be completely nuts. I mean, Ruth Crowell, who I've met, is very nice and very switched on, but I suspect that the LBMA comes under a lot of pressure from its main members. And I would think it's the main members who are probably pushing this one to postpone the information. So I can't really answer you properly on that one. The Saudi Aramco IPO I find absolutely fascinating because I'm told by all the people, all the oily people who know about these things, that the really big Saudi Aramco field is pumping sort of 50% oil and 50% water. In other words, the reserves that are in there are probably wildly overstated. So I sort of think, well, how are you going to, if you're going to raise $200 billion or some incredible figure for, I don't know, 5%, 10% of the company, you know, you've got to have a proper prospectus. I mean, no exchange is going to allow that one through without having a prospectus which actually stands up. And this is the problem I think they have in the West. On the other hand, if you look at China, she's splashing out money all over the place. She's perfectly prepared to buy influence. So I would not be surprised if China and Russia between them actually probably take that stake. I can't see how it can really be floated on a Western exchange.
So rather than do an IPO,
yeah,
they sell the stake privately to China and Russia sometime after this new whole arrangement is set up of a yuan-denominated crude oil contract.
One of the other beauties of doing a deal with China and Russia, or whether it's one or the other, I mean, it certainly wouldn't be Russia on her own. One of the beauties of doing it is it can be done very, very quickly. So I actually think that that is a runner. And then we have the interesting situation that you have got Russia, which exports something like 40% of global oil. You've got Saudi Arabia, which is about another 30-something percent. And, you know, it makes everybody else look rather tiny. But they've also got, of course, they've also got Iran on the books. That's Russia, as it were. So it looks to me as if we could suddenly find that Russia is in a monopoly position when it comes to supplying oil around the world. Now, what that will do for anything, I don't know. It could actually have quite a, if you like, an emotional reaction in the market. That could actually drive the oil price up quite sharply if it happened. So I think that's something certainly worth watching. But the more I, you know, the more I look at this Saudi Aramco deal, the more I feel that that is what's going to happen. I felt that actually for a long time, because right from the beginning, I just knew that nobody would be able to sign off a prospectus in the West.
Well, and talk about wanting to play ball. Oh, yeah, we'll float you the $200 billion. We like offloading our dollar reserves anyway. We'll float you the $200 billion for 10% of the company. But you're going to play ball with our exchange. Makes sense to me. Alistair, one last thing, because I think it's intriguing to double back to this LBMA thing. Because other than just the abject corruption of the banks coming up with this price and then not telling anybody about it for 14 hours, what could they possibly be trying to accomplish? Because if the daily fix has been a benchmark price for wholesalers and jewelers and everybody else around the planet for the last 90 years or whatever it is, if you're not going to give that information for 12 hours, well, it's useless. There are now twice daily fixes in Shanghai, as you know, with the yuan-denominated gold contract. And so are they just – I mean, is this all part of the process where the power is shifting? You know, that pricing power is shifting away from London to Shanghai. Or is it, again, just absolute corruption of the banks just wanting to keep the information to themselves?
Well, I'm always reluctant to accuse the big banks of corruption, but
because that never happens.
No, not at all. But I think it could well be a measure of how the physical market really has moved away into Asia. Mm-hmm. I mean, the LBMA is not really dealing in physical gold as such. It's dealing in forwards as opposed to futures. Right. And these are private treaty contracts between members of the LBMA. And the only reason they're part of the LBMA is so that they can trust each other to deliver if they're called upon to do so. There's a common vaulting procedure. The quality of the ingots are standardized, and they're only produced by refiners who are members of the LBMA. So it's all that. But remember that the basic reason for the LBMA's existence is to use gold as part of a carry trade. That's how it all started. And if you went back into the 80s, gold was going down after that peak right at the beginning of the 1980s. So nobody really wanted to hold it very much. But what you could do, because it was nobody else's liability, you could use it as collateral to run out and buy US treasuries, which at that time, a six-month T-bill was yielding you 6%. And what did it cost you to lease the gold? It probably cost you about 1.5%. So, you know, this sort of business was absolutely wonderful. And, of course, it really took off, so much so that the central banks, in order to satisfy the demand in the market, were leasing their own gold into the market, which, again, was being used as collateral to buy U.S. treasuries. And so this was gold being mobilized in the market, if you like, to finance budget deficit. And of course, we don't know quite how the music ever stopped, because when the gold price turned and the gold price really started rising, there was this unanswered question: how much of that gold had been leased from the central banks and then sold into the market? And so at some stage is due to go back into the central banks. And would the central banks keep quiet about it because they don't want to aggravate the market price? In other words, they were then in an appalling, difficult position, because the central bank, if they decided, look, we're not going to roll this over again, we've had enough of that, we want to hang on to our gold, they drive up the price, and they've still got gold out to someone else, and that someone else goes bust, or they have to sort of say, well, will contango became really, I think, out of control. And they have been covering up ever since. It's rather like when something goes wrong, and you start covering it up. you end up covering it up more and more and more and more, and then eventually someone finds out.
Yeah, right.
And I feel that the market is a bit like that. And this could be, I'm not saying it is, but it could be part of the explanation why, you know, this vital market information is being delayed, if you like, to a point where it's no longer useful. The whole thing is sort of somewhat crazy. The other thing I don't know, I mean, the other thing I really don't understand is what happens to all these contracts. The contracts on COMEX, which are exchanged for physical.
Right.
I mean, the amount of gold that's delivered out of COMEX on that basis, on these sort of agreements, is just absolutely massive. Now, I understand that the other side of that are forward contracts in London. But how are they unwound?
Right.
I mean, I suspect the answer is that, you know, if I'm big enough and I go out and I say, OK, I'm going to take delivery of that contract, the answer is that the whole thing gets settled with a cash payment. Thank you very much. I think that's probably the way it's resolved. But you can see there's so many cross currents in a market which has become worse than opaque and started off from a foundation, I think, of, you know, central banks lending physical gold to banks under their control, and then finding they can't get their gold back without bankrupting the banks under their control. And, you know, you can see how the situation just sort of gets completely out of hand. And I suspect that at some stage we're going to see that unravel.
Yeah. No, and you wonder, again, this is such a – they've made their own benchmark utterly useless by doing this. And the timing of it and everything else makes you wonder – if it isn't all somehow related. But we'll see. I really appreciate your time, Alistair. I think this is valuable. If anything, for people could understand what's going to happen, the long-term significance of it, but also to, you know, I just kind of want to throw some water on anybody out there that thinks that, you know, they're going to wake up a week from Monday and all hell's going to break loose.
That never happens. That never happens at all. And as I said earlier, I would be very surprised if some of the really big national players like the US, like China and so on and so forth, they will be watching it very, very carefully, and they will not want to see market disruption.
Right.
I think on that, both China and America can agree, whatever else their difference is.
Yeah, at least on a temporary basis. You know, there definitely seems to be a willingness by all parties to keep the system, if you will, going. But like you said, that probably won't continue indefinitely.
Well, yeah, the one party which I think is probably getting very impatient is the Russians. Salisbury last
right,
week.
Right,
These poor Russians. I say poor Russians, ex-spies. That has been quite appalling, really. And it's very difficult to come up with an explanation other than the Russian state was involved in their attempted assassination because of what was used. I mean, it wasn't actually very clever. There are other theories. Perhaps it might be a rogue element in the CIA.
Well, sure.
You can't rule it out, but I would, you know, what's the likelihood? Pass, I don't know. The other thing is that this chap did betray a number of KGB agents. Be that one of those managed to get hold of some weapons-grade Novichok, I think it's called, and decided to work independently. And, of course, that puts everybody in a very difficult position. I mean, what can Russia say? We don't have control over our chemical weapons. You know, that's a very difficult thing to come out and admit. And, of course, the British are in this sort of ridiculous situation where, without any evidence of the contrary, it really does look like the Russians have tried to assassinate a man and his daughter on British soil. And the whole of that thing, I think, that's going to get worse. We've had the initial sparring, but I think that is going to get worse. Russia's eventual response to this could well have an effect on markets. I mean, I just sort of look at the situation where they're getting control over so much of the world's energy. I mean, already they can just turn off the taps on Europe when it comes to gas supplies.
Mm-hmm.
I just sort of think that there could be a wake up call. I mean, it could well be that this Saudi Aramco deal, if that is announced soon. People will think, oh, hold on a minute. What does this mean? What does this mean for the price of oil? You've then got probably far better control over the price of oil than you had in the old OPEC days. So, and who's controlling it? Ho, Russia.
Yeah.
You know, the evil Putin. So I don't think that Russia is out of ammunition when it comes to responses within a geopolitical context. That is the thing probably to watch in the coming days.
Agreed. And it's on multiple fronts, and it just apparently is getting worse and worse, and the crisis grows darker, and again, shoving Russia in the direction of China, and it brings us all the way back to where we began. You know.
Well, yes, and China and Russia have been working together for some considerable time,
yep.
So there's nothing new in that. But one of the other things that's new is all these changes that are going on within the Trump administration. I mean, Larry Kudlow, replaced Gary Cohn. I mean, it seems to me that he's very much on side now when it comes to using the weapon, if you like, of trade sanctions.
Yeah.
Incidentally, the trade war is the only war where you try and win by shooting yourself. It feeds into patriotism, and you can see that otherwise reasonably sensible people like Larry Kudlow, they get the job by kowtowing to that. And this Liz Cheney, I mean, she was, who replaced Pompeo at the CIA. I mean, she was implicated in torture.
Right.
So you've got the ex-head of the CIA, now Secretary of State, and very much a protectionist. So I just the whole thing is looks like almost a CIA takeover, a Langley takeover, if you like, of the Trump administration. You've certainly gone a long way from the days when Donald Trump was talking about how he wanted to talk to Vladimir Putin, he wasn't in favor of increasing military spending. You know, that's not the way to go. I mean, now he's just gone 180 degrees round, and this is bound to have an effect on the relationship between America on one side and China and Russia on the other.
Yeah, no doubt about it, and I only see it worsening, and it's all part of that de-dollarization process.
Yes.
As this yuan-denominated crude oil contract is.
Indeed.
Alistair, it's been great fun. I very, very much appreciate your time, and I think this information has been extraordinarily valuable, and I think everybody that's taken the time to listen has a much better understanding of what's going on and what the impacts are going forward. So thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
No, it's been very much my pleasure, Craig.
And everybody out there, thank you for listening. I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon.